Welcome to the Numerologist Podcast, where we bring you a very special guest every single week to help guide you on your spiritual journey, live with abundance, and inspire your soul.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Numerologist Podcast. I'm Rose. I'm your host. I'm the content manager here at numerologist.com. Now, I'm really excited to introduce today's guest to you, as it's the first time we've had a witch on the show. She's the head witch, in fact, of the Wise Ones Coven. It's an online coven that explores different magical themes each month to help its members deepen their craft and walk a spiritual path with like-minded souls. Now, this guest is also a talented tarot reader, a yogi, and a maker of all things magical, including the Wise Ones Spiritual and Magical Planner. Please join me in welcoming Jessie Huntenberg. Hi, Jessie. How are you?
Hi, Rose. I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having me on to speak with you today.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Now, I'm really excited to talk to you because you actually call yourself the head witch of the Wise Ones Coven. And now that is super interesting to me. And I know a lot of our audience, a lot of our listeners love sort of all things magical. So could you just give us a bit of a background into who you are and what you do?
So my name is Jessie Huntenberg. I am a professional tarot reader. I am also, like you said, the head witch of the Wise Ones Coven, which really means that I run an online coven, which is a continual resource for anyone who is interested in the magical and the spiritual arts of the woo persuasion. So I've been calling myself a witch for about 6 years now. And it's something that I came to, like most of us do, in a time of trouble, in a time of struggle, when we feel heavily disempowered for a variety of ways. And, you know, being a witch, it differs from person to person. I often like to say there are as many different types of witches as there are people who identify as witches, because it's so eclectic and it's such a wide range of folks. But you know, you come to this path with a desire to change, basically with a desire to transform the self in highly resonant ways. And when I came to the path, it really, really helped me to begin living in a way that was very conscious, that was very mindful, that was deeply empowered. And it's really my mission to help others do the same.
Yeah, wow. I thought that was really interesting that you said that there's so many different types of witch, as many people, you know, as many types as there are people, which is really quite an interesting concept, because, you know, a lot of people think witch or magical person, and they sort of conjure up one sort of picture, I suppose. So that kind of prompts me to my next question. What actually is magic?
Okay, so you can be a witch and not practice magic. Just as a little disclaimer, you can be a witch who works with deity and doesn't actually practice magic. However, if you are a witch that practices magic, really what you're doing is you are giving or applying will to a very specific intention. And in my opinion, a soul resonant intention, one that reflects the desires of your highest self and your highest good, is certainly key. An intention is really something that you declare that you will be, that you will have, that you will do. And sometimes you just declare it as if you already have it. It's very effective. So an intention is, I am deeply self-confident, for example. That's the intention. The will that you apply is everything else that you do in the service of that intention. So the will can be the spell that you cast to try to bring that intention into being. It can be, you know, what you do at the altar with your tools. It can also be any steps that you take in the mundane world, which is really what we call the world of consensus reality, to try to bring that into being. And in my opinion, it's also what you do to shift your mindset to help you to align with what it is that you ultimately desire. An intention is a desire, and magic is doing what it is that you can, you know, both magically and, I believe, practically, to bring that into being.
Now, In terms of the actual word spell, I think, you know, a lot of people, and for our listeners, they'll know that I've said this time after time, you know, the world of spirituality and divination and all those kinds of things, they're becoming more mainstream, which is awesome. And that sort of goes for sort of magic and spell casting and those kinds of things. But there are still quite a high number of people who would hear the word spell and think, oh, that's something either technical or too out there or those kinds of things. But listening to you talk about it like that, it actually shows that it's not this sort of difficult thing to do. It's not hocus pocus standing around a smoking cauldron, although it can be, I suppose, if you want it to be. it's more that sort of, like you say, that intention setting, and people do that in their normal lives anyway without even thinking about it, don't they?
Oh, they absolutely do. You know, witch is definitely it's an identity that one adopts themselves. But you know, I look even into popular culture and I like think in my head, I'm like, oh, that person is a witch. they don't even know it, but everything it is that they are doing can fall under the magical umbrella.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's a funny point to think about. You know, if you can say, oh, well, that person's definitely a witch, what are the kind of things that you would look out for? And what are the kind of things that our listeners could look out for to sort of identify themselves? And I know you said that it's an identification you put on yourself, but what about those people who are, you know, naturally witchy, I suppose?
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you're naturally witchy, there are a few things, a few either behaviors or states of being that you normally exhibit. Natural witchiness, you're looking for signs, or you see signs, or you find signs in things. And we refer to those as synchronicities. You know, if you see something in the sky, like say you see like a crow flying or an eagle flying, and that means something specific to you, that is pretty witchy. Also, if you feel deeply connected to your intuition and your deep inner knowing, if, in other words, if you have a certain feeling about something and that feeling tends to at least drive part of your decision-making process, that is definitely a witchy attribute. You know, part of being a witch is getting in touch and in tune with the self and its relationship to nature. And when we say nature, we're not necessarily talking about being out in the woods or, you know, being amongst the trees, which is all well and good, and which is a thing that most witches enjoy. When I say nature, I almost mean like environment, what it is around you, paying attention to how it is that you interface and interact with things around you in a way that is somewhat mystical, in a way that takes a step back and looks at things, tries to see the underlying patterns, and you know how you might work with those underlying patterns. You may find yourself a person who has like these feelings, like I said, intuitively, like I just have this feeling that this is going to be this way or this is going to be that way. There is usually a connection to nature, or to the preservation of living things, or like deep reverence for living things. So if you're someone who is deeply committed to like animal causes or who loves animals, that could be, you know, a witchy attribute. Someone who's deeply compassionate for the, you know, for the world at large, for the environment, someone who is not solely interested in the aims and goals of the self, but also like takes into account how what they do affects the whole as well, I'd say is definitely a witchy attribute. And if you just want to get into the like the cute surface, you know, of witchcraft, like if you love crystals, it's really witchy. If you like really love like frolicking through the fields, it's witchy as hell. If you love the Renaissance fair, you know, like all of those things. And I'll be perfectly frank, I do love all of those things. And that's like, I've always been like pulled to, you know, to gems and herbs and tinctures and all of that loveliness, and also mystery. If you're drawn to understanding more about the mysteries of being alive, of being a human being, the things that we can't really understand, and if you want to work with those things, that's definitely something that's witchy. And also if you work with ancestors or guides or deity, I'd say is pretty witchy. If you're kind of speaking to a deceased loved one and gaining guidance from them. If you're doing anything astrally, and you might not even know that you're doing it, because I've been doing it since I was 14, and I had no idea really that that's what I was doing. If you like have a really, really vivid imaginal landscape, and you have a, like, if you travel around there and have interaction there, that's something that's pretty darn witchy as well, I would say.
Mm. So you mentioned that, you know, you've been doing this to some extent without even knowing it since you were 14. So how did your journey from 14-year-old you to you standing here now as the head witch of your online coven, how did that work, and what were the steps that you took to get there?
Okay, so it's kind of a long process. I was atheist, you know, for like hardcore for at least 10 years. And it's funny because I really declared myself an atheist when I was 14. Basically, I like did not recognize the Abrahamic God or this this idea of God as absolute. And that freed me up to explore different avenues and different things, which, you know, I explored through this secular lens, but didn't really realize that it could also be seen through like a craft paradigm. Like, I really loved the transcendentalists and the romantics, you know, those authors that spoke very lovingly and elaborately about nature. And I traveled, you know, I traveled the astral. I didn't know I was doing these things. I think I was kind of in denial about this side of myself, about this nature, and was very practical and was very heavily invested in the masculine. And when I say masculine, what I mean is the active paradigm of like logic, rationality, practicality, and like execution, like getting things done. And it really wasn't until I became pregnant with my daughter that I had somewhat of a sea change occur. You could say even traditionally, I just got in touch with my feminine self, because something so physical like that happening can't do anything but connect you with the feminine and the feminine divine. But it was more than that. I had felt that almost when I gave birth, I went through a huge personality shift. This was during my Saturn return. I switched jobs, moved houses, got married, and had a kid within the span of a year.
Wow.
So a lot was going on. And I'm sure, as you well know, when there's so much change and transformation happening, it's hugely destabilizing, which does allow the opportunity for intense transformation. I think it really got me to a point where I like felt like I had nothing left to lose. So finally, my rational brain took a step back and allowed this deeply intuitive part of me to come to the fore and to reestablish my power, you know, to start setting boundaries, to start living in conscious ways, like to not really be a victim of circumstance, and certainly not just accept what was coming my way. I was like, I there are a lot of things happening here that I'm confused by, that I'm upset by, and that I won't accept. And then I cast my first spell. It was something so, it just came up within me as an option, which was so strange to me. Sometimes you can't really explain when the walls are torn down like that, things begin to surface from the subconscious that have like long been repressed. And so I cast a spell that was like, it was somewhat of a binding spell, I'd say, which is basically to make sure that someone doesn't have any influence on you, to keep them from influencing you in a certain specific way. And that really, that began the journey. And it was a very intense 12 months following that. It was like, you could kind of say that I was hooked, and I was completely and deeply devoted almost instantaneously. I started working with deity, and I hadn't spoken to any deity in like 13 years. I started learning the tarot. I was familiar with tarot because I studied critical theory in school, and I was familiar with Jung and the collective unconscious and all that. So I started studying tarot and just going like full force. And about a year and a half to 2 years later, I started my tarot business. So it was something that immediately, from the moment it was allowed to surface, was just like, yes. I'm like, yes, this is deeply what I want to do. This is deeply what I feel this is deeply what I should be doing right now. And it was just full speed ahead commitment wise.
Wow. How empowering is it when you get on the right track? You know, you can think you're on the right track for years and years and be somewhat satisfied, but then when it finally all clicks together, it's just this amazing unlocking of your power and energy, I suppose.
The acceleration, it just starts to move so quickly. Mm-hmm. And it sometimes feels like you've been doing work unconsciously for years that you didn't even know that you were doing. And when everything falls into place, it's just like, whoa, it just tends to accelerate really quickly because so much of what you've been considering or mulling over, it finally begins to make sense. It crystallizes in a moment of understanding, and you can just you can begin to act finally. Like you can actually begin to do something with what it is that you've learned about yourself.
Mm-hmm. So is that understanding why you actually started your spiritual business?
Yes, it was the process of having gone so long without a spiritual practice and having discovered one, and knowing that there were many out there like me who didn't have that kind of outlet and who were struggling and didn't really have something to engage with to help them to learn, to help them to move forward, to help them to heal some of their shadows. I was just like, I don't want anyone to be lost for as long as I felt like I was lost in terms of self-knowledge, understanding and coping mechanisms and methods and ways and things to actually do to become empowered, to heal past wounds, to move forward in very conscious ways. So I'm like, I just want to be, now that I know this and now that I've experienced this, I want to be of service so that no one else has to hang out in that space for like years like I did without this as a potential tool. Anyone who could benefit from it, that is.
In your opinion, let's talk about those people who are sort of, you know, like you or like you were walking around without knowing sort of where they're going, and they know they've got something but they don't know which direction to take it. What would you say to people who are sort of teetering on the edge of, you know, their power or, you know, coming into something magical, really? What would you say to them to sort of take the next step in their journey?
The next step, I think, is somewhat, and it's going to sound ironic for me to say this, it's like a bit of a leap of faith and or a suspension of disbelief. So what I find is, you know, those who are looking for something, they think witchcraft is the thing, but they're not really quite sure. They're kind of afraid of casting a spell, or they're afraid of exploring a spiritual paradigm that differs so greatly from the one that they were taught. And for some who have been raised in like fundamentalist belief system, it's really, really hard to explore something that has been, you know, somewhat demonized or that they were taught was evil and could lead them to, for lack of a better term, like burn in hell for eternity. You know, there's, it really depends on, you know, what your background is and where you're coming from. But regardless, even those that I've worked with who have been atheists, it's strange for them to begin speaking to deity because they really haven't for years, or maybe not at all. And, likewise, those who have come from a more, fundamentalist paradigm, like there's this internal fear and this conditioning that tells them that, you know, doing something like casting a spell, it could damn their soul. So really the first step is like a bit of a surrender to the process of exploration through spellcraft and kind of taking a leap, and in some people's case, like taking a risk. It feels like a risk. It feels like a risk to their self-perception, because they feel that they are this certain person. And if they begin dabbling in the spiritual practice, then that kind of, they're going to be forced to redefine who it is that they are. Some are fearful for what their family members or their friends would say. So it's really just this moment of surrender and saying, you know what, I'm going to give this a try, because I just want to see if maybe this will work, because what it is that I'm grappling with, it's too much for me to kind of deal with on my own, or at least I haven't really been navigating it as successfully as I'd like to. So I'm going to trust in myself. I'm going to trust in my pull to this or my interest in this, and I'm just going to give it a try. There's no need to commit yourself to the practice before you've even done anything. There's no need to say, okay, now I'm a witch and there's no turning back. Like you don't need to make that kind of commitment so soon. And in fact, in the Wiccan tradition, which is probably the one that's most, people are most aware of in popular culture, I'd say, there's this tradition of studying for a year and a day before you even commit to that kind of a path. So just give it a try. Just give it a shot. Read a little bit probably first. That would just give you a little bit of confidence and a little bit of awareness as to what this might be, at least basically. And then try it out. See how it feels. There are plenty who would say that you have to know a lot before you cast your first spell. And I am not one of those. Obviously, I cast my spell before I really do much of anything. And that was how I moved through the process. But I think there's like this fear stigma around the casting of spells. And like, once you do it, you realize it's like, oh, it's really just this. And it's pretty benign, except for what it is that you bring to the table. You know, it's basically, it's going through certain steps to help change your perception of a thing. And like all of the, like you said before, like the hocus pocus about it, it is just, that's what lies on the surface. You know, what really happens is the inner transformation that occurs through going through the process of ritual or through casting a spell. And I think once you cast your first spell, you just realize you're like, oh, that wasn't that big of a deal. That wasn't so intimidating.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point that you mentioned. At the end of the day, you don't have to fully commit. You can dip your toes in. You can try things. And that doesn't just go for magic and witchcraft and those kinds of things. It goes for pretty much everything. So I think it's just about being brave and taking that, like you said, taking that leap of faith, really. So I just want to talk about like the why. What, in your opinion, why would it be important to examine and explore the unknown, the psyche, spirit, mind, and magic, and all those kinds of things?
For one reason, it's my personal, you know, position that what it is that we don't know often leaps up in sometimes very disturbing and destabilizing ways. And I guess what I'm talking about specifically is the shadow. And this is a Jungian concept where the shadow is that which you've suppressed because you're ashamed of it, because it's too painful, because it's something that's really difficult for you to confront and face. And it's something, so then you push it down. You're like, I can't deal with that. I can't explore that. It's just too much for me. And sometimes we think that if we repress things, then they disappear. And I don't really think that that's the case. I think when we repress things, they find outlets to pop up. And when you actually begin to examine the self and the mysteries of the self, then you have the knowledge that you need to actually kind of not necessarily control those impulses or the shadow, but to find, you know, positive outlets and positive channels to run things through. And also when you confront these things, you can begin to heal from them. There's much that's difficult to navigate or change if you haven't first healed. You know, I guess even just to give an example of, you know, being in a relationship or having multiple relationships that have very, very similar attributes that end in very similar ways. Dating individuals who tend to have the same fatal flaw or who tend to betray or hurt you in the same way. I feel that those are patterns that are, that are created and sustained by a lack of awareness of the self and the personal, you know, pain and trauma landscape that we all have. So beginning to explore the self and healing the self in that way and through craft is a way to be aware so you can take back your power over choices and decisions. And as it, you know, when it applies to the mysteries, you know, the mysteries of the all, of the interconnectedness of us all, of the cosmos and everything grander and larger, exploring that, you know, through witchcraft and through many different other means is a way of finding peace and center in the midst of an often very challenging human experience. When we can connect with something greater than ourselves, it allows us to see the bigger picture and it allows us to see that, you know, we are not alone. I think wrongly thinking that we're alone in our suffering or we are alone even in our existence and experience, is what causes a lot of strife and imbalance and whatnot, and a lot of disempowerment. And when we step back and we realize, hey, I'm not alone, that we're all here having a human experience. You know, that most anyone I'm going to talk to has had difficulty, you know, they've had trouble, they've had pain, but they've also experienced joy, and they've also experienced love, and they have the capacity for compassion. It puts things into a perspective that gives a sense of peace and stability that allows us to begin to live in much more conscious ways, because it's really hard to take charge if you don't have a solid or stable foundation.
And, you know, if there was ever a reason to do something, that sounds like a pretty good one to me. Now, let's talk about, again, those people, you know, just teetering on the edge of getting into witchcraft. Is there an easy sort of beginner spell that you can tell us about that would be an easy sort of way into witchcraft, or, you know, just trying things out? It might be a bit difficult for you to just explain here, but I'm just curious.
Not necessarily, because I'm thinking in terms of like the self-love and the self-care movement, which is largely secular. And, you know, and witchcraft definitely has a huge place for that. I'm also thinking of affirmations, positive affirmations, which is, you know, described as more spiritual or alternatively spiritual than witchcraft related. Many affirmations are written in a way that kind of sounds like a spell intention. So, you know, when you rise and you speak the affirmation, like, today I am grateful, today I am proud, today I am in control of myself, for example. Saying that over and over and over again until it begins to work on a cellular level, until you until you forget to kind of think about what it is that you're saying and the muscle memory kicks in, that is like a way of charging a spell. That is one of the means by which folks will charge a spell. So that's a really good way to start. It's just to like create an intention that sounds like an affirmation or a mantra, and to just repeat it over and over and over and over until it begins working on a cellular level. That's very benign witchcraft, but still considered for sure witchcraft nonetheless.
I love that. That's a very sort of simple way for people to sort of get into things, I think, and just try things out. Now, you've talked a bit about deity, and I just wanted to know what your views on the existence of deity are.
So for me and many others of my ilk, it's very complex. I am not a deist, which means that I don't believe that there is any specific personification of deity, like objectively existing in the world. In other words, like, I don't think that there's a localized space I could fly to in theory and find a deity there, manifest physically. That's not necessarily my perception. I began working with deity as an archetype. This is, again, another Jungian notion. The archetypes are these like primal types that we find cross-culturally that represent certain, you know, traditionally human traits. So like, for example, one of the deities, my matron deity, the Morrigan, is a war goddess and a death goddess. You find war and death goddesses cross-culturally throughout the ages. So I would work with that archetype on the astral as a manifestation of my subconscious and or the collective unconscious and or something that might actually even objectively exist in some form. I kind of try to keep it fluid and open, but I say I definitely began working with the Morrigan as an archetype, as an idea, as a representation of a certain entity that I would actually have chats with on the astral. And I know I'm saying things like chats with on the astral that might not actually mean anything to those of you who are listening. But if you can think of it in terms of a vision quest, or even if you were, before you were dreaming, you were in that kind of space between, you know, half sleep and half dream, and you discover a very vivid landscape that you've created in your mind, and now, you know, present or create this archetype or this figure in your mind, and then speak to it, talk to it, and see what it says. You know, that's primarily how I work with deity, as a guide, as, you know, maybe myself giving myself advice through like a third party. But that's my personal approach to deity.
I find it really interesting how you sort of explain that, because it reminds me of, you know, I've spoken to people before who've spoken about, you know, their spiritual teams and, you know, their personal angels and all those kinds of things. So for you, is deity sort of a personal thing? You know, do you have your own personal deity? And is it something you choose or is it something you find?
So I do have a deity crew. Some were chosen, some were found, and some were chosen found, if that makes any sense. So like the Morrigan, I'd say that I was chosen by, because I was on the astral. I had consciously chosen to work with Brigid, which is the Irish goddess of creativity and light. And I'd been working with her on the astral. And then this trip kind of took a turn that I didn't expect, where I was led to this other dark goddess with a raven, and this archetype appeared before me that like I wasn't really familiar with. And it wasn't until I started doing some research, I'm like, oh my goodness, that is the Morrigan. And when I had, of course, chills when I was like, that is very strange that this archetype should appear in this specific way without my knowledge or awareness. But then an example of like half chosen, half being chosen by, I guess, would be the archetype of the trickster, because I've always been drawn to that archetype in pop culture. Like since the very beginning, there's something about that archetype that deeply resonates with me. And then when I identified that, I'm like, huh, that character's the trickster, and that's the trickster, and that's the trickster. Wow, I really have a thing for the trickster. Then I'm like, I think I'm going to work with the trickster now. So there's just so many different ways that you can kind of come into contact with deity. And when it feels right, it feels right. I've also tried to reach out to some deity, and I've, you know, dabbled a little bit, or maybe had a conversation or two, and they didn't come back, and I didn't really, you know, seek them out again. That's how you know that it's not really necessarily what you need to work with in the moment, perhaps. Maybe they'll appear down the line, like that was my relationship with Brigid, as it were, but like I have my deities that I work with, and it's very fluid, and I can sometimes work with pop culture figures that represent certain archetypes as well. So I definitely let it be fluid and let it be what it wants to be.
Now, before we wrap up the podcast, I've got one last question that I wanted to ask. Obviously, you know, the whole world is going through a bit of a time of uncertainty, and, you know, there's a lot of fear and, you know, anxiety in the world at the minute. Have you got anything that people listening could potentially find comfort in? You know, is there a way that they can use magic or spells at this time to sort of transmute that fear into love and hope and happiness?
Well, there are so many different ways that you might actually be able to go about this. But for like the absolute beginner, I could recommend something very, very simple, something that also doesn't seem so witchy as to be intimidating. You know, light a candle, white, very popular color, because it can basically mean anything, and speak the world that you want to see. Speak what it is that you want to come out of this. Or you can even speak words of kindness and comfort and support and healing to the world itself. And if you're it's the spirit in which you do these things, I think. That's what makes it a spell. And a spell is it's just another way of saying almost like a prayer. It's saying, please may this. And right now, I think it would be, you know, it's really useful to just light a candle, because again, that's a point of contact, of focus, to help you focus, which is a major, you know, major component of spellcraft. And just say, you know, I am safe. I am, I have what I need. I am okay. We will get through this. It seems so simple, but it can be so like life affirming, and it really can have a really deep impact on your sense of well-being. Even if you were to do this every morning, every day, you know, it can help. It really does wonders. It's something that I've definitely been doing, and you think it's so simple. How could something so simple have such a profound impact? It really can. It can help you reframe. It can help you find center. It can help you feel like you're actually doing something positive by, you know, wishing for compassion and healing in the world, it can make you feel less powerless in that way.
Absolutely. And like you said, that is something so simple that everybody can pretty much do. And what I like about that is, you know, you can do that on an individual level, but us putting that out there into the world via this podcast, the knowledge that we're sort of all in this together and that collective sort of energy of everybody doing it together is also some solace in the situation as well.
Oh, absolutely. Things compound. When we all come together for a common goal, this is something that I do kind of believe, the power in that is, it's quite intense. And the effect it can have is much larger, much greater, much grander than anyone could ever really expect.
Absolutely. So I think we'll leave it there. Thank you so much, Jesse, for joining me today. And thank you to our listeners who I hope you will light a candle with me and with Jesse tonight.
Thank you so much, Rose. It was a pleasure. And thank you to everyone who listened. So much love to you.
Thank you for listening to the Numerologist Podcast. If you loved it, make sure you subscribe. And don't forget to check the show notes for an extra special free gift.